Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
It's not October yet. Tomorrow is the start of October, but we do have playoff baseball. A quadruple header in wild card round today, starting with Cleveland and Detroit at 1 o'clock. Love this time of year. Grant Paulson's joining us right now. Before we get to baseball, I'm going to ask you what I just asked callers, and that is, we're four games into the season. What's your outlook on what this team will be over the final 13 and maybe beyond?
I think right now I feel about the team, Kevin, like I did coming into the season, which was that I thought they were going to be flawed defensively and playing a tougher quarterbacking and schedule overall. And I thought while last year was a bit of a magical carpet ride, I thought Jaden Daniels would be exceptional. I didn't know if it would go as well as 12 wins and two playoff wins, but I think he'll mask deficiencies. I think he's going to play at a really high level, and they're going to be around a double-digit playoff team and a wild card hopeful. So I had them at 10 wins coming into the season, making a wild card berth. I still have them there. I think that they do have some fatal flaws on defense, and I think they've got to be brilliant offensively like they were last year if they're going to get to 10 wins. But I think they have a chance to be. I don't know about you, but I actually feel pretty good about what the O looked like with all the injuries the last 2 weeks with Mariota at the controls.
Yeah, I mean, considering that they were depleted without their two best players, they still put up 27 points on the Falcons. And, you know, I got asked this question, and I answered it on the air yesterday, but I'll ask you, do they win that game with Jaden and Terry?
I don't think so. It's certainly possible. I mean, it ended up being, for what it looked like, a one-possession game. I just think it was one of those games where Atlanta could have done whatever they wanted whenever they needed to. You know, if they had to score 37 or 40, they probably could have done that, in my opinion. They had no answers on defense. They couldn't get to Michael Penix. They got two hits on him the entire game. I think they've been ultra-conservative defensively in calling plays since the Green Bay game over the last couple of weeks. And when you get pressure with four like they did against the Raiders pretty often, that's fine. But it certainly didn't work against Atlanta. They didn't cover well. I think there were a lot of reasons for that. But, yeah, I just think it was one of those games where it was clearly a bad matchup on paper against the Atlanta offense, as bad as they'd been playing. And to Zach Robinson's credit, he got to some of the stuff they hadn't been doing for a few weeks. There were no air yards in the offense. They hadn't really taken any shots. They hadn't tried to push the ball down the field vertically. They hadn't tried to get Bijan Robinson in space on linebackers nearly enough. And all of those things happened in the game. But yeah, would it have been closer because you have better players on the field? I'm sure of it. I think it could have been a little more effective offensively, but I didn't think that was the problem. But the one bugaboo on offense, Kev, was they were 1-for-8 on third down. And I think I looked at it today, and like 5 of the third downs were 3rd and 8 or longer.
Yeah.
I mean, so those without Jaden Daniels are low percentage third downs anyway. Now, maybe he steals you 4 yards as a scrambler and gets you into some better down and distances, which is very possible. The one thing I'll say, too, to throw back at you about the offense that I actually have really high hopes for, they're so much more explosive in the running game, not only than they were last year, but I mean, I've not been this excited about how a tailback carries the ball. Watching Krosky Merritt, it's 6-7 carries a week, but every single week it's explosive, it's fun, it's stuff that's not blocked and schemed. Rodriguez hits a 48-yarder. They've got 3 different guys now who have 40-plus yard runs in the first month of the season.
Yeah, I agree.
They didn't have that club in the bag. So that gives me a lot of hope as they piece this whole thing together going forward.
Yeah, I agree. I just would like to see, you know, he's got 29 carries, 172 yards in four games, averaging 5.9 yards per carry. I'd like to see him double that, you know, to 58 carries in the next four games or more. And it's funny because I think I asked Smoot yesterday, if I told you one of those two backs emerged into a 15, 16, 17 carry a game guy over the next four games, or, you know, at the end of the next four game stretch, who would it be? I think your answer and my answer would be the same. It would be Bill. Although if it ended up being Rodriguez, I think it still would be pretty effective.
I'm quite sure of it. Rodriguez has been excellent dating back to preseason against ones. I mean, obviously, the 48-yarder
was
mostly
in the regular season when he got opportunities.
Yeah, he was more effective than B-Rob. I think he was about a 5-yard-per-carry guy. Frankly, Kevin, he's always been good when he's gotten chances.
Yes,
you know,
I agree.
There's never really been a problem with him. Here's my nervousness about that answer. My anxiety would be, so the answer should be Bill. But there is a very clear frustration is probably not the right word, but, like, there's a knowledge on the staff that in pass pro, they're not comfortable yet.
Well, coach him up better.
Show up a couple of times.
Coach him up better. Get him out there because him carrying the ball is really effective for this team.
Agreed.
I think we've known that for a couple of weeks now. And by the way, it's not unusual for a rookie to struggle in pass pro and for them
1,000%
not to trust him in pass pro. But
by the way, like, figure out a way. I was talking to someone about this in football yesterday. I'm like, he is not the first guy, to the point you just made, who might not be great in pass pro, but every time he touches the football, it's electric. So find a way to both get him on the field on the right downs and distances and opportunities, and also help him continue to progress and develop in the other way. But it's not like you and I are asking for 30 carries. He's getting 4, 6, 7. We're talking about 11, 12, 15 carries.
Yeah.
That's not a gigantic jump.
Right. You know what you reminded me of? And I bet you've already mentioned it because I know why you would know this. But they lost to Zach Robinson on Sunday as the offensive coordinator, part of the Shanahan and, of course, the McVay tree, which this, you know, Quinn seems to have an issue with offensively. Have you already mentioned that?
I have. This is a thing, by the way, in my opinion. Like, if we're playing thing or not a thing.
It must be a thing. It must be. Now, not every Shanahan McVay team has Bijan Robinson in the backfield, but still. Zach Robinson, by the way, as you know, was on a major hot seat last week with the performance against the Panthers. People killing him for being in the pistol as much as they were in the pistol and were last year. You and I both had a problem with that because it just didn't seem right for you-know-who at quarterback. But anyway, we move on. I want to talk about, first of all, before we get to the bracket and the matchups, I mean, what a comeback by Cleveland. What a regular season this turned out to be. And you're much closer to it, and you're involved in it, you know, during the 162. But what were some of your biggest, like, you know, kind of takeaways from the 25 regular season and things that will be all-time memorable?
Yeah, it was an amazing year. I mean, baseball's in a really good place. Now, it's got to be noted that we're headed toward an inevitable and certain work stoppage that's going to quell all of the momentum that they have created and built with attendance and TV numbers up. But it really was an amazing year, and I think it's a talent thing. It's a young talent thing for sure. I do think the changes to the game have largely been massive successes, whether that's the time of games. I saw a stat yesterday, 3-hour-and-30-minute, 9-inning regulation baseball games this year. There were 3 of them. You know, we're only a handful of years removed from hundreds of those over the course of a season. So that's been a smashola and a good success. There were no-hitters this year, which isn't necessarily a great thing on its own, but the offense in the sport is up and batted balls and balls in play is up. So there's some good things happening. For me, when you ask what I'm going to remember, I think my number one seed is Cal Raleigh hitting 60 home runs as a catcher. I mean, this guy, I don't know how what he did is possible. It is jarring. Because he's not a DH first baseman who catches a little bit. Like, this is a elite defensive framing full-time catcher who's excellent with a really upper echelon pitching staff, who then just so happened to, in his secondary assignment, go out and hit 60 home runs. And in one of the great statistical offensive seasons we've seen in the American League that Aaron Judge turned in, maybe, just maybe, overtake him for the MVP award in the AL.
Isn't he favored to win it now?
He is, narrowly, I think, in most books. I don't know if it's every book. It was a dead heat going into the final weekend of the season.
Yeah.
I'll say this. This is one of those things, Kevin, where even in my head, in the back of my head, I tell myself, you're wrong. Like, you're wrong. I would vote for Raleigh because of the defensive position. Judge was better in almost every way other than home runs, and he just had a better season. But if you take him off the Yankees, I do think there's more talent. There's a lot more there. Whereas, you know, the way I ended up doing it in my mind, runs scored, runs batted in for those two guys divided by runs for the team, it's about a 31 and change percentage point worth of the Ollie. It's about 29% with Judge, which is negligible. I just think the Mariners have scored a lot fewer runs, needed Raleigh more. But that's going to be fun. And then the other thing was, as you said, the collapse and the breathtaking renaissances of a couple of these teams that don't happen. We've never seen a team erase 15 and a half games like the Guardians did against the Tigers.
Yeah.
I mean, as a Nats fan, I find it funny. As a National Baseball fan, it was just eye-opening. But what happened to the Mets, someone needs to do a think piece. Someone needs to – Beth Wilkinson needs to do an investigation. Like, give me 200 documents on my desk.
No, we don't need to waste your time
ridiculous.
With that. But Soto had a great year. Remember, at the beginning of the year, they were killing him.
Oh, they hated him. And more so in the media. There were some clubhouse issues with him and Frankie Lindor, I'd heard. They weren't kind of getting along initially. But I will say that the most amazing thing statistically maybe about this entire season, Juan Soto was two steals away from 40-40.
Yeah.
Like, the 40 home runs, sure, clockwork, whatever. The OPS, the on-base, the walks, that's what he is. Kev, he stole 38 bases.
Yeah.
If you would have asked me going into the year, he's going to have a good base stealing year, what could he do? I said, maybe he gets to 20. Like, that's nuts. That's another change in baseball. More steals, more running, can't throw over as much, bigger bags. Like, the stolen base is back in a way that it hasn't been in 20 or so years. But guys like Juan Soto being ultra-aggressive and getting to almost 40 steals, that's pretty crazy.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns.
You know why
fans.
It's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos. Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
By the way, I don't know what you're like, although with certain player I know what you're like, but I root for Harper. I root for Soto. I really wanted the Mets to make it. It sounds like you didn't. By the way, he wasn't great in that final series against Miami where they needed to win 2 out of 3 and they won 1 out of 3. I wanted him to be in the postseason. I wanted to see him in that setting. It sounds like you didn't.
So I think I can kind of have my cake and eat it, too. I always root for Soto. Like, every time he's at the plate, I want a 440-foot opposite field home run. And I am 1,000% with you on Bryce. The booing of him coming home has always bothered me. I've always liked Bryce. All these guys that moved on, whether they walked in free agency or were traded, if you give me good memories as a fan in this town, I'm going to root for you. So, yeah, I pull for him. But as a team, and more so really it's about that fan base, which is largely insufferable out at Nats Park, I was not rooting for the Mets at all. And I also just root for, like, what's fun, a little bit of almost like the college football in me, the chaos of it, so to speak. The Reds making the playoffs as a team that's not that good, but with some really fun talent. They've got a lefty pitcher who's got great stuff, went to the University of Virginia, and Andrew Abbott is going to get the pitch in the postseason. Ellie De La Cruz, I think, from just an electricity standpoint, has some of the great tools in the game. Him being in an October spotlight stage, I think, is going to be really good for baseball. Like, I kind of wanted the chaos of Hunter Green, who throws 100 in October, and this Reds team that nobody really thought was playoff caliber. Not to mention, there is something too when you spend all the money in a sport where, you know, some teams' payrolls are a few hundred mil and some teams basically have a player's worth of money that they spend on their roster. Yeah. I almost always root for the team that doesn't really get to spend money in the smaller market, and that just happened to be the Reds squeaking in here.
All right, so let's go through these matchups. We're in the wild card round, and it starts today with the incredible comeback Cleveland, 15.5 back on July 8th. They were 10.5 out on September 1st. They beat, I think, Skubal a couple of times down the stretch, but he could pitch twice for Detroit. Who do you like in this series and why?
The Guardians are the better, hotter team. I'm going to take Detroit because of Tarek Skubal. I think, you know, game one he goes, that's right. A scheduled win as far as I'm concerned. Like, I lock him in. You cannot do this with more than maybe three or four pitchers in the entire sport at this point in October, because it's all about bullpen innings now, and it's four or five good innings at a time from starters. But I think Skubal, you pencil in for a quality start and maybe like seven innings and a run or two today. Now, if they get to him and they beat them, it's over. I think Cleveland wins the series. But I assume Skubal pitches a gem, they win, and in this short wild card round, it's just a dramatic benefit. So I think because of the ace, Detroit is going to be my pick despite coming in cold.
Boston and New York in the American League. The Red Sox seem to be the underdog in this one, you know, I think legitimately so. Who do you like and why in this series?
I like Boston better. The Yankees come in very hot. They'd won 10 of 11 going into the final days of the season. But look at who they played. It was Baltimore.
Orioles, White Sox. Yeah.
It was White Sox. Yeah, they were beating up on three of the worst five or so teams in the American League. So I think they just kind of took advantage of the schedule more than they actually. Great pitching matchup, by the way, in game one with the lefties, Garrett Crochet and Max Fried, who are two of the best in the sport with sub-3 ERAs. Give me Boston to upset the Yankees in that series.
All right, so you like the two, you know, teams that were not playing as well as their two opponents in the American League. What about the Dodgers in Cincinnati? You've already said Cincinnati, you know, not a good team. Let me just ask one quick question about the Dodgers. Will Kershaw be a starting pitcher in the postseason for L.A.?
I think he will make starts for sure. I think it's going to take a lengthier 7-game series as we get deeper into the month.
Will they use him out of the bullpen in the meantime?
I would imagine so, yeah. I think he'll get multi-inning opportunities. And then, you know, I won't call it like an opener, but there's going to be games where he goes out there and you kind of let him go as he's good. As I said, we just 2 years ago or so, I think for the first time, saw bullpen innings overtake starter innings in October. And so he's actually ultra valuable to have length, to be from the left side, to be used in that way. But if you're asking me like over under a half start for him, I would be stunned if he doesn't start a game in October.
All right. So you like the Dodgers in this short series against the Reds?
I think they roll. Yeah, I think they roll.
What about San Diego, Chicago?
It's my favorite series. This is the hardest one to predict. Padres bullpen's exceptional, even despite losing one of the best relievers in baseball about a month ago. I think that they win this series, and I think it's tight, but their bullpen, for me, makes them a legitimate threat to win the whole thing.
In the American League, Seattle and Toronto are sitting there waiting for the two winners. Who comes out of the American League?
I really like the Mariners, honestly. I think that you know, they hit enough, and they certainly have the power enough. Raleigh's going to have a big October. They don't win without his bat. But that pitching staff, Kevin, it's about, to me, swing and miss repertoires, elite strikeout stuff in October. They've got it in spades. It's arguably the deepest rotation. It's one of the better back ends in the entire league. I like the Mariners to come out of the AL.
And then if it is Red Sox, Blue Jays, how good are the Blue Jays? I mean, they barely held on to win that division. They certainly weren't supposed to win the division when the season began. What does that look like if we get to, you know, either matchup, Yankees, Toronto, or Boston, Toronto?
Yeah, I think they're on upset watch either way, frankly. I mean, the first answer, how good are they? They're exceptional, right? They finished the number one seed in the league for good reason, over 162. But that's one team, based on how they finished, where I am a little bit more nervous. Like, there is an alarm for me. Some of the other clubs, you know, that were kind of middling, that were wild card caliber, I think you can kind of flip the switch. I didn't love the way it went for Toronto down the stretch. They also had to burn Gausman to end the regular season, obviously, as they were trying to win the division, so they didn't get to align things right up front, but they'll now have the break to do that, which is helpful because they did, you know, win the division and get some time off depending on, you know, the number of days and how they line up their bullpen. But I would expect that the winner of Yankees-Red Sox beats them in a competitive series.
I mean, if we see a Dodgers-Phillies, you know, best of five in the second round, that will be heavyweight matchup for sure. Is this the year for Philadelphia or not?
I like the Phillies a lot. I mean, I saw them at Nats Park four times in a row, going back a little over a month ago now, and felt like while watching them, and it was right before Wheeler got hurt and got bounced, but felt like that's what a World Series team looks like. They've got everything. And, you know, they're a lot like, you know, these teams where it's almost like the Ravens or the Bills, where year in and year out, you throw the roster out there on the field and you go, this is as good as it gets. You can win 14 games in a Super Bowl and they haven't been able to connect the dots yet. I do like the Phillies to come out of the National League. I think they've got, even without Wheeler, as deep a rotation as anybody in the NL. They come at you with four really good starters. If there's an undoing, it's that I don't completely trust their bullpen. But I think they're going to hit. They used to rely a lot more on power even than they do now, but you still got Schwarber with over 50 bolts. Harper's a big game guy. You can go up and down that order. Turner just won the batting title, hitting 304, which, by the way, is the lowest batting title in the National League since the 1800s, right, which is wild. But I don't see a major flaw there. I just think they're the deepest, best-built roster.
All right, lastly, the team that finished with the best record, the best run differential, the Brewers, who just, at one point this summer, they were as hot as anybody's ever been. Do they emerge out of this thing? Can they win the World Series? Can they get to it?
So here's where I could be loud wrong. I mean, they were so damn good. And, like, we just talked about the Brewers, like the Phillies, rather. The Brewers' pitching was better. I mean, they also, you know, it's not power. It's not run productivity with slug. It's working counts, grinding pitchers, everything is earned, you know, on base percentage and slapping the ball around and putting the ball in play. It's all the old school stuff that you're going to like to watch if you're a baseball fan over the years. I just don't know that they have the firepower. And as good as their staff was, when you put them up against some of these frontline aces that cost money or, you know, top of the board type pick stuff, I think it's third starters who all threw really well. And I just wonder what that looks like in October. So the formula worked for an entire season, but as you've seen in the years past, they get to the playoffs, and it's a little bit of a different beast, right? That's kind of my prediction.
Okay.
We'll see if it comes to fruition.
Do you have the Phillies winning the whole thing?
I've got the Mariners, which is a little bit sneaky and surprising. I've got the Mariners beating the Phillies in the World Series. But, yeah, I think the Phillies are, for me, the most complete team on paper.
Thanks for doing this. I'll talk to you later.
All right. Appreciate you, Kev. Good talking.
All right. Grant Paulson, everybody. 106.7 The Fan, Grant and Danny, every day at 2 p.m. All right. Steve Sands next. He was calling the Ryder Cup all weekend long for NBC. We did not talk about the Ryder Cup. It was awesome to watch. Steve will join us next.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And you're seeing exactly
why it's not
outside of Cleveland. You know, think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns.
You know why
fans.
It's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos.
Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.